Okay. One, two, and three. Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast, everybody. My name's Steve here, and we got another banger on our hands. This week, all about the Jalisco New Generation Cartel. What? Steve, didn't we just do them? No, we did the Jalisco with a Z. These guys... or another banger from Dr. Joe Haswell. This is about to be the new number two cartel in Mexico. They started around 2009. The Jalisco New Generation Cartel has quickly risen to number two status and is in a constant war with the Sinaloa Cartel that was formerly run by none other than El Chapo. This group has made a name for themselves with brutal violence and strict territory control. If they want... no, we're going to actually have to redo that one. No. No. One, two, three. Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast, everybody. It's your boy, Steve Fear, and we got another banger on our hands. This one comes from Dr. Joe Haswell. It's all about the Jalisco New Generation Cartel. But Stevie Boy, oh, Stevie Two Shoes, Stevie Kiss a Face, Stevie Two Tits, Stevie One Butt, but Two Holes. Didn't we do the Jalisco Cartel last week? No, people, what are you people thinking? No, we did the Jalisco Cartel, a cartel in Canoga Park, California, who sells heroin like the tamale lady in your neighborhood. This one is maybe one of the most evil organizations I have literally ever heard about. It's another banger from Dr. Joe Haswell. This one is about the new number two cartel in Mexico. They started around 2009. The Jalisco New Generation Cartel has quickly risen to number two status and is in a constant war with the Sinaloa Cartel. That was formerly run by who? Come on, say it with me, folks. You've been listening to this long enough. El Chapo. This group has made a name for themselves with brutal violence and strict territory control. If they want a territory, they will take it by force, and they do not care if they are removing a rival cartel or a small rural community. They use violence for control and are responsible for multiple massacres throughout Mexico. I'm talking multiple massacres of 30 plus people dying, folks. They use violence for control, and today I'll talk about the most violent things they've done as a group. This was one of those one bangers. Normally I split them up in two, but this one, it's just about their crimes. Should I have done their history first, crime second? What are you doing? What are you, the World on Drug Police? When I researched this with my guy, Dr. Jim Haswell, we noticed that the crimes are so unspeakable. So purely evil that they had to be done now. I think we will get to the rest of it. We'll get there. No one's saying we're not gonna get there. I'm probably gonna do it next week. But this one, it's like... I almost got somewhat ill reading one part of this. That's what we're getting into, folks, okay? Enough about this. Enough of this nonsense that's still happening today about 300 miles from where I sit now. This episode I was recorded in the Comedy Store Studios. Shout out to my guy, Brucey Gray. Didn't help with this one because I had to do it. How have I been? Shout out to Brucey Boy for doing last week's episode for me. Ya boy was back on tour with the Marchina. And, boy, was it the best time of my damn life. 420, we flew into Nashville. Whoop, whoop, what's up? 420, good to see you, buddy. Did I blow a fat stack of marijuana? Maybe some of that West Coast Gardens? I did. I brought some of that West Coast Gardens weed with me all across America. Shout out to Mike Olson. Definitely the best weed Nashville's ever seen. Started blessing some folks. Oh, gosh. You know who got some of that West Coast Gardens weed? drop that. Bless my boy, Dr. Joe Haswell, with a little bit of that and his wonderful wife. So we fly into Nashville. Now listen, folks, if you've been listening to this podcast religiously, which you should have, or I will find you and I will hurt you. And you know, about a year ago, mid-pandemic, I performed in... Come on, you're going to get it. Where did I perform? I performed in Nashville at Zany's, and I had a mediocre time. One thing you never want to do is you never want to fly into a show on the road and do that show that night. Why? Because jet lag is real, especially at my age. When I was going down from Nashville the first time, I flew in. I'm watching the TV, American Airlines, not to brag, doing pretty well. They paid for it. I would have gone Spirit. No, I'm kidding. I would have walked. Kind of like a Gump, Forrest Gump thing. But I've got bad knees, so it would have been like a crawl after a while. But so I get in there. Oh, damn it. Bam! What's up, babe? Doing my podcast. Well, what's up? I appreciate that, but I'll help you. I'm just excited to see it, and I'll just work on this podcast, and then I at least gotta clean up this fucking room. It's atrocious. Okay. You got a fast pass? Oh, awesome. Cool. Love you, babe. See you soon. Bam! I just had a conversation with my girlfriend, so I'm not really sure. She had to call me, not really sure where I was. But let's just go back to this. Flying into Nashville, American Airlines, it's a TV screen. As I'm going in, you see their surrounding areas. And I see the word Knoxville. Like, okay. Getting close. If you didn't know, Knoxville, whitest city in America. It's actually true. So fly in, get ready, smoke a joint with Lucy, the booker of all the zanies. Get in the condo, take a little nap, get ready, go on stage. When I go on the stage in Nashville at Zany's, I get on stage and I say, "Hey Knoxville, how you doing?" Now this is on a legendary club I've been working to get into. And these people, I've never felt the air sucked out of a room quicker. It just went... Kind of like in space when someone like has to like, there's a giant alien and they close the room and then they open the other hatch and it sucks out the alien in space. I was the alien being thrown out of Zany's Nashville. And then I went into flop sweats and the crowd hated me. And then that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, as it would, for Nashville as a city and as an experience. So when I'm going in with Birdie Boy, gonna do the Grand Old Frickin' Opry, maybe you heard of it, America. I was very scared. Why? Because Judy Marmel was flying in. Judy Marmel is probably the most powerful manager in comedy. She is the head of Levity, my management group that I'm... Well, not my management group, but the management group that reps me. Management groups kind of work somewhat like a pyramid scheme, but a pyramid scheme that everyone works... So essentially... The biggest manager is at top, the one who she has Whitney, she has Bert, she has Sebastian, she has Mark Norman, she has arguably the biggest acts. What she does with those guys and the people under there, get a little bit smaller acts, and then we open for the bigger acts, and then if someone, the bigger act can't do anything, then they throw us in there, or if they're like, hey, can we get the bigger act to do this, they'll go, yeah, you can have the bigger act to do that, if we get the smaller act to do a different weekend. That's how it works out. She's there. She owns, co-owns the company Levity. What do they own? They own the channel AMC, Food Network, and they own every improv across the country. So to say this woman, person, is important, a little bit of an underscore. Also, a bunch of UTA agents. CAA is another agency. This place is packed. Nashville. I'm going there. How am I thinking? I'm thinking, don't call him Knoxville. Right before I go up, you know, it'd been a little while since I'd dipped my toes in giant audiences. Have I been going around LA and murdering? You know, some people say that. But doing 50 people at the setup every Friday and Sunday is a little bit different than doing 5K at the Grand Ole Frickin' Opry. So when we get in the Grand Ole Opry, there's like 50 dressing rooms. Each dressing room is kind of themed like some country star. I'm not a big country guy. I'm going to stop talking like this. But I was just walking around pretty just amazed. Just the venue. To even think that ever one day I thought I would play that. I mean, listen, did I play that or did I ride someone else's coattails to get there? Hey, what are we doing? What are we, anti-coattail? I'm not anti-coattail. I've been pro-coattail since we beat the English with our blue coats, folks. Yeah, since the birth of America. So I'm getting super nervous. I'm about to go up. Dave goes up, does very well. I look and I'm like, okay, Dave does pretty well. I should do pretty well, too. I'm pacing. I'm obviously very, very nervous. Then I go on stage. And I proceed to have maybe the greatest set I've ever had. And then I get off stage, and it's just one of those things where you look at yourself and you go, okay, I'm not wasting my life. I shouldn't have stayed home and got a government job and married a high school girlfriend who got, we both equally got fat together. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but sometimes, at least before I was with Jordan, sometimes you think you made some wrong decisions in your life, don't you guys? And then there's sometimes there's moments that tell you you haven't, and this was one of those moments. Also, my girlfriend Jordan came, and we were able to fly together. Her family moved there. Her family came. That was the first time they've really seen me do stand-up. And I murdered at the Grand Ole Opry. So, needless to say, they're fans. I guess. I don't know. Maybe they like me more. Normally, people like you more when you turn out to be good at your job. Then we did the Ryman. The Ryman Theater is the original Grand Ole Opry. But they switched over to the real Grand, or the one right now, in like 1950. So, it's been like 70 years. So, like, I know 1950 sounds closer, but like if this was 1995, 70 years ago, 1925, and no one thinks those are at all close to each other, right? So it's like, yeah, okay, the other one was cool, but all the pictures look like the most racist people you've ever seen. I mean, the people that worked at the Ryman, I could see in their eyes just a burning cross in the distance. It's a different time, man. You can't get mad at people for just hating people. Different color of the skin. Well, I don't know. It had weird vibes. And so this one is like, yo, this shit's been here 70 years, the Grand Ole Opry. To me, that's now the Grand Ole Opry. But we did the Ryman. Did good. That was fun. Definitely more of a Grand Ole Opry fan. Then we went over to Columbus, Ohio. I was able to play some disc golf with the guys. You know, I'm very scared about my knee. Other than that, then flew home. It was great to be out with the guys again. It was great to, it was just a great fucking experience in my life that I probably will never forget. So, yeah, it was cool. Other than that, guys, we are back with Laura Peake tonight. One of my good friends. Oh, I could say how I know her. Laura Peake is from where? Nashville, Tennessee. And she moved out here. Once she moved out here, her and I really started to hit it off. I really, you know, when you just kind of click with someone, you can make them laugh, they make you laugh. So I started booking for all my shows. We hang out at the store, we'll get lunch. And I just had her on, and I think we have a pretty good friendship. It comes across in the episode. This episode is the Zalisco Boys. Oh, wait, no, this is the second half. Motherfucker. No, not right now. Go away. Oh. Fuck. Part two of the Zalisco Boys. Bam! Fuck. The Zalisco Boys, a group of business-minded heroin peddlers from the town of Zalisco with an X in the state of Nayarit. Not so much a cartel as a business strategy, the Zalisco Boys pioneer a new method of profiting in the drug trafficking world. Delivery. And what is perhaps the darkest form of laissez-faire, by acting as both the source and mobile storefront, the Zalisco Boys were able to quickly expand across America using basic marketing strategies to become what many acts have called the best dealers they'd ever seen. Unfortunately, their rise also coincided with the beginning of the opioid epidemic, and what resulted was a dangerous, self-replicating style of retail drug trafficking operating on a national scale from an individual level. This episode was done by Dr. Joe, it was Gray Livingston, recorded live at the Comedy Store with my help from Bruce, with little help from Bruce Gray. Damn, I'm going to have to do that one all over again. Bam! The Zalisco Boys are a group of business-minded heroin peddlers from the town of Zalisco in the state of Nayarit. Not as much a cartel as a business strategy, the Zalisco Boys have pioneered a new method of profiting in the drug trafficking world. Delivery. And what is perhaps the darkest form of laissez-faire, by acting as both the source and the mobile storefront, the Zalisco Boys were able to quickly expand across America using basic marketing strategies to become what many acts have called the best dealers they'd ever seen. Unfortunately, their rise also coincides with the beginning of the opioid epidemic, and what resulted was a dangerous, self-replicating style of retail drug trafficking operating on a national scale from an individual level. This episode is done by Gray Livingston, our senior producer, and the Comedy Store Productions, Comedy Store Record Productions. I want to give a shout out to Bruce Gray. Next week, we are doing the Jalisco Boys, the second most dangerous cartel in Mexico. I'm going to tell you this, folks, about next week. It is the most gnarly episode we've ever done. At least the crimes. They kind of made me sick at one point. All right, guys, that's the episode. Really appreciate you listening. Share it with a friend. Comment if you can. I've got some questions up on Spotify. If you want to read those, write them in. You can even tell me a suggestion on who I should do next. As always, shout out to Gray Livingston. Shout out to my guest, Laura Peake. Shout out to Bruce Gray for helping last week. And a big shout out to Comedy Store Records. Enjoy the episode, guys. I'm going to be honest, it's a fun one. Well, I fucked that up.